Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway, off-Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to the composer Janine Tesori. In 2015, her score for the musical Fun Home won her a Tony, and before that, her work had been seen on Broadway in Thoroughly Modern Millie, Shrek the Musical, Violet, and Caroline or Change. This season is a busy one for Tesori. Caroline or Change, the 2003 musical she wrote with Tony Kushner, is due to be revived on Broadway in the spring. But before that, her newest work, Soft Power, is playing at Off-Broadway's Public Theater after well-received runs in San Francisco and L.A. Written with the playwright David Henry Wong, Soft Power is a play that turns into a musical as it flips our perspectives on the U.S., China, and the power dynamics of an East meets West story like The King and I. Tesori's here with me to tell us all about it. Hi, Janine.
Hello.
Thanks for joining me. Soft Power is sort of a difficult thing to describe, project to describe. How do you describe it to people when they ask you what you're working on these days?
I would say the short answer to that is it's a play that develops into a musical that is the reverse of The King and I. It's a look at America from a Chinese point of view. And it's also a look at the Asian American experience. It's a look inside the way that someone like David Henry Hwang and many people describe their experiences in America as being seen as the perpetual foreigner. Mm. And what it's like when someone comes from foreign soil here and we really turn the lens the alternate way.
Right. And it sounds like it's changed quite a bit as you've, over the years, the two of you have been working on it. When David first approached you about the idea, what was the idea at the moment? What did you think you were, the project was at that point?
Well, the idea was always about looking at The King and I, where the I is not an American.
Okay.
Or not a person, a white person, that a person of color is the I. And they go into a land that is dangerous and unknown, and they have to influence those people and, look at missionaries or the way that Arabia or, Siam, any of these places. So it's really turning it on its head. It was always going to be that story. And then the election happened because Hillary was president when in David's story, assuming that that would happen, and then David was stabbed. And those two events and what happened to him, it's also sort of the course of his belief system and how it was challenged by being injured, blindsided, attacked from behind the way that he, many, many people felt, at least surprised on both sides.
Right.
And what it's been, what it's really revealed about the past 4 years.
Right. And that stabbing that happened to him, that was right around the time of the election? It was just after, is that right?
It was sometime after the election.
Yeah. And was it always posited as a play that would become a musical? Was there ever a moment where you were working on what was a full music, what was considered a full musical?
No, it was always a play with a musical in its back pocket, in the way that I was really interested, as was David, as is David, in forms, not to shift forms for the sake of shifting forms, but you know, a character is always innocent of what's to come. Even in planning, we don't really know until ex post facto, until after it happens.
Right.
But I think the idea was that David set out to write a play about something, and then it turned into something else. So the form itself is innocent of what it's going to be.
Right. Yeah. And what can you characterize the ways in which the results of the election sort of influenced how the show shifted?
Well, it was a big deal that we didn't have I think the country was gearing up to have Madam President.
Yeah.
I think the idea that someone with no experience in government, certainly not a scholar, not a lover of history, of the language, that's an interesting relationship to the truth.
Right.
A way he's a showman. And it always feels like, and I felt this in the 80s when Donald Trump, you know, there are a lot of people who love him and stand by him. I know many people. But
this is with Reagan? Is it in the 80s? Is that what you said?
No,
with Trump. Oh, with Trump in the 80s. Oh, right. I see.
With Trump in the 80s.
But right before he was president.
Someone who was selling something all the time, who sort of always was grabbing a tiger by its tail.
Right.
And the fact that he is, you know, ascended to office is, you know, is still surreal to me.
Right. Yeah. And obviously, David, there's something highly autobiographical about David's, you know, contributions to this, and that, you know, there's a character called DHH.
Yeah.
And something similar happens to him as what happened to him in real life. Is there something, are there elements of the show that feel for you particularly personal that you've contributed?
Well, you know, it makes me really, first of all, I feel very patriotic about this country. I feel like the country, so many people have laid down their lives for this country. They're just the suffragist movement. All of these movements where people have put themselves in harm's way because they believe in the republic. I do too. And I think the way to believe in the public is to challenge the republic, to challenge the and look for the ideals of democracy. It's a messy system, certainly, because it involves debate and discussion. It involves the collective, for sure. And yet it's a system I deeply believe in. And trust. I think that when you're looking at a country that is made up of people who are the other, the only people who could ever say they could not go back to where they came from are indigenous people. So when the rhetoric is spat out, go back to where you came from, that would be all of us, every last one of us, except for the people from whom this country was stolen.
Right.
The country itself was founded on freedom of speech, slavery, and genocide. That is in the debt of the country. And yet, here we are. What are we going to do? Well, to further the conversation, I think that shows, especially musicals, have great soft power, that they can transform a belief system that's in place, and they can do it in a different kind of way. You know, Rodgers and Hammerstein did it all the time.
Right. And tell us a little bit about kind of your compositional palette for this, because it seems like you're sort of engaged in this act of, like, I don't know, compositional empathy or something, where you're sort of imagining
a musical from another perspective musically, how it would sound, right? I mean, that's what it sounds like to me. What is that what it is?
Or? I think when I first started, it said yes, and we were talking about what it would be like to have Chinese authors set. It was like went through this Byzantine intellectual exercise, and I thought, uh-huh. Good God, I don't know how the hell to do that.
Well, that's my question,
so
right?
I'm just going to write show tunes the best that I can in a classical way that I love, mm-hmm. and sort of, you know, hopefully pay homage to the beats and the way that shows that I've always loved. I think musical theater is a magical form, and I'm endlessly humbled by it because you can't really, I don't know if anybody can master it. I mean, Sondheim certainly has mastered it, but I don't feel like I have. I'm in search of it.
Right.
And I think, you know, sometimes just that those classical rhythms are so fun, and when they're delivering complicated material, I was very interested in that.
Interesting. So it's not like you're drawing on a Chinese sound palette or something like that, or a.
I think that from the time that I was I did a culture exchange in China, and I produced world music all through my 20s, so right. I'm pretty well versed in many of the styles. They're not my culture, but I worked with so many musicians, and from being in China and working with the students over there, I hopefully subtly engage in that, but it's not, it wasn't the driving force, no.
Right, right. And it sounds like you've done a fair amount of work on the show since it's run in LA last year, and you're continuing to do some work on it right now. What did you learn in LA from watching the show in LA that is guiding you now as you bring it to New York?
You know, the show's ambition is great. I don't know if we'll reach it. We're trying. The greater the ambition, the simpler the spine. George C. Wolfe always says that to me, and he's right.
Yeah, that's pretty smart.
We weren't able to do any changes from LA to San Francisco, and I was overhearing a conversation where someone was going, they didn't make any changes. Well, we could not.
Yeah, right.
We had a week. And the week was simply, Lee did an incredible job of simply remounting the show.
This is Lee Silverman, the director.
Could not, there was no way to make one change. Not a light change could differ between those two. It's just a miracle that it happened.
Right.
So our opportunity was here. And I think it's really about clarification, distilling without reducing, looking at the rhythm and inevitability of the show, where there need to be great edits, a great cut, a great clarification. To reinvestigate and look at what the audiences were completely befuddled by. Mm. It's a show that asks the audience to go on a journey. So they have to know, are they going in the N train, the 2 train? Are you getting on a plane, a caravan, you know, like a scooter? What are you doing?
Right.
And I think people will go. So we've been really looking at those techniques.
Right. And this is a musical with a predominantly Asian American cast, which is a rare thing.
They're all Asian American.
Yeah, except for one, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a rare thing. I was about to say that's a rare thing these days, but anytime. That's a rare thing.
Anytime. Yeah. Also, there have been very few shows about the Asian American experience.
Yeah, right?
It's Allegiance, Flower Drum Song. And
what else is there? Is that it?
I think that might be it. I don't know because I'm not, I don't know enough about that, but there are very few.
Yeah, yeah. Does that, are you aware of that, watching that? When, like, as you were sort of creating that, how did that sort of awareness as a, for both of you kind of filter into kind of what you were doing?
Well, I would hope to make, you know, to add to the repertoire of musical theater. And this feels like that. I think it's really important when we talk about representation that we also talk about what the experiences of all Americans and most of the Asian American, and that includes Korean, Filipino, Japanese, Chinese, Vietnamese, that they're they've been cast in The King and I's, The Miss Saigons, and that's how a lot of them, as they described to me, got their training. And yet have rarely played an Asian American inside a musical. There's a lot of inclusive casting, but not to play an Asian American experience, telling that story.
Right. Yeah. And looking at the show, what the show is becoming now, what do you feel like has surprised you most about kind of what it is what it has become and what it is saying from, you know, back when you started on the project?
I think the thing that has surprised me is the way that it's moving, not that it's moving, because David writes stories that I find really compelling and moving. But basically, I think when we got to New York, we challenged him to take himself seriously as a dramatic character. And I think that he's reluctant, and the conflict is he's reluctant and I think desperate for people to know. And that is a really interesting, it's like the reluctant passenger. And yet he's driving, so the reluctant protagonist. And I find that rub really, I'm very invested in that.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. And so Soft Power is an original story, and so is Caroline or Change. Do you enjoy, what's different about the challenges of, you know, working on something brand new as opposed to an adaptation of, you know, like one of your other musicals, like Fun Home, for instance, or Thoroughly Modern Millie, or whatever? Like, what's different about the challenges of sort of crafting something new for the first time with no prior roadmap in another form?
Well, I think you have to make, in my mind, all musicals are adaptations. So you have to put the play, you have to put the grid yourself, and make sure that it's got a structure that you can, you know, if you think of it as a laundry line, that you can hang the narrative and the driving force on. So I think you have to do that yourself. And that means that first part of the process isn't done for you, even though Fun Home was daunting because of its graphic novel, the novelistic nature of juxtaposition of image and text. How do you dramatize that? And it took us a long way to find it, but there were so, you know, my copy of that book is basically in powder because I've been through it so many times,
right.
And there were so many clues inside it. So our clues are inside David. And there are many parts where I just said, I just need to ask you about this and this and this and this, and how one explores an experience, a trauma, a way of looking at the world and asking other people to look at it, to attempt to look at it with radical empathy, to step inside your shoes, knowing that they can't live there, but they can travel there.
Right. Yeah. And doing all that work and working with him in that way and working on this show, has it shifted your own perspective in any way about sort of the issues that the show addresses?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do shows to learn.
Right.
I don't tend to do shows that are tremendously commercial. I feel like I want to write the things that I haven't seen before.
Right.
And this has been I am forever changed by this show and this cast forever.
Right. Can you elaborate a little more on that in terms of what, how you think differently? Or?
Well, I guess that I have been really thinking black and white.
Yeah.
I've been really thinking about America being, you know, that the struggles of African Americans and the Latinx community. And I've seen in plays, there's certainly representation of of storytellers. But I, from my experience and what I'm looking at, the Asian American storytellers, there are not a lot of them.
Right.
And there are more people writing plays, but there's certainly not a lot of people writing musicals.
Right.
And I just hadn't spent the time to think about not only that as a quantitative question, but as a qualitative question about what happens when that is not there.
Mm. Right. This is a busy season for you. You've got this, Soft Power, and then you've got Carolina Change coming into Broadway with Sharon D. Clarke, who is reprising her Olivier-winning performance. What's it like to revisit that now, with the current political situation being what it is and the world being what it is today, as opposed to, you know, the early 2000s when you were first working on the piece?
Yeah, we opened here in 2003, and then we were on Broadway in 2004.
Right.
I think that Tony is, you know, Tony is our most prescient.
Right. This is Tony Kushner, of course.
Tony Kushner, your collaborator on that. Most prescient and precious playwright.
Yep.
In terms of looking ahead to see how the state of politics will catch up with the world.
I mean, we saw that with Angels in America, right?
Angels in America,
Buddy
Cobble.
Yep.
So I think now Carolina changed that, the idea of a Confederate soldier, the statue being taken down. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that there were people who understood it-ish then. Right. Well, we understand it now.
No, it plays very differently now, yeah.
It really does. The stakes of that play very differently. We've seen what has been revealed, and it's something that he's always known and experienced. So I think I think that it was incredible. And we went over to Chichester to see.
Which is where it premiered, yeah.
Yeah, it premiered.
Yeah. And tell us about her performance. I heard such raves about it. What I didn't get a chance to see it in London.
When I look at the original production of Carolina Change, you're just finding our way. And I think when it gets revisited, and especially with time later, and Michael Longhurst, who is a wonderful director, he looked at it, you know, with great rigor. And it's his first musical he's ever directed. And so he has this sort of, I love the way that what he found inside it, and it's quite different. Sharon, what she plays is she's statuesque, and yet she's quite welcoming and very warm. So she has this, she's intrepid, and at the same time, you see the love that was once there in a big way. And I really love her performance as well.
Yeah. Revisiting Carolina Change or any sort of old piece of yours, how do you look at it with your contemporary eyes as with yourself as an artist? Is there something watching Carolina Change again? Is there something in particular that you're extremely proud of that you feel like you guys got really right?
I look at it as, it was at the start of my becoming a more serious artist, working with Tony and George, like I have been guessing more in terms of, and it was the beginning of my deep sense of study into narrative and the power of musicals. And I wasn't really quite sure, even when I did Violet, there was so much guesswork. And the working with those kinds of artists, Tony Kushner, George C. Wolfe, Tanya Pinkins, your tennis game gets much better. I got sharper. The questions I started asking were deeper and better questions. Right. And so it started a way of working that really changed me.
Yeah. And are you the kind of person who sees stuff you wrote years ago and thinks, well, if I could just get in there and do that one thing, like tweak that one thing?
No. It's like for me going back and rewriting a sixth grade haiku. I mean, the time's passed.
Right.
We did that with Violet, and I think we made some changes.
Yeah, right, for Broadway,
with
right?
Violet,
yeah.
But we went back to some of the things that we thought before we changed format and that kind of thing. But I think you get so, you just aren't who you were when you wrote the show.
Yeah, right. And looking at your work as a whole, what do you think of? It can be hard to identify for people who have seen a lot of your shows to sort of identify a signature sound for you, because I feel like, you know, you draw on the sounds of whatever is appropriate to the story or the setting or whatever. Do you consider yourself as having a signature sound or a signature style? And if so, what is it?
I think my signature sound is about the text. Because I think I'm really, really interested in inside the text of something and what the soundscape for that show would be.
Right.
And I think early on when I got a lot of shade my way about being eclectic and that I didn't have a style, and I used to care about that, but I don't really care about that anymore, because I really sit with these characters for a long time and then and figure out what the orchestration should be. That's to me where it really comes out. So it's not just about the piano, but what is really going to be heard. And then I really think about my relationship to that, and then I just go.
Right.
I just, you know, I learned a long time ago to stop worrying about, I want my shows to do well and I want people to come see them, but I've learned to really, as best I can, stop worrying about those kinds of, you know.
Yeah. Does music come to you first, or words that maybe are sometimes written by someone else? Like what comes first?
What the song needs to do comes first.
Okay.
You know, the activation, what they need to do, and then it starts happening. So the idea of the song,
right?
really what its job is to carry the right. story from where to where, even if it's just to add rhythm and delight.
Yeah.
That's a job assignment. Until I understand that, I can't write it.
Right. Yeah. And you touched on this a little bit, but I, one of my questions for you is what draws you to the stories that you end up musicalizing? I mean, you mentioned that it's like things you've never really seen before, that's what really attracts you.
I think it's point of views that I haven't noticed. Like with Tazewell Thompson, I wrote an opera that premiered this summer.
Yeah.
We'll be in at the Kennedy Center, and then Chicago, and then it will be in New York in a year, I believe.
Right.
And that is about a black police officer and the African-American experience on the Blue Line.
Right. And it's called Blue? Do I have that
it's
right?
It's called Blue.
Okay, great. Yeah.
And I hadn't thought about it, and it's something I wanted to think about,
right.
and I wanted to spend time with, and I wanted to, you know, dramatize it. And I think a lot of the characters that I really feel my heart going out to are characters that no one has noticed before.
Mm, right. And that leads me to my next question, actually. What, you've done a fair amount of work in opera as well. What, how does that complement your sort of musical theater work? And when is something an opera versus a musical theater piece?
I think, you know, in I'm not an opera scholar, but what I've noticed about opera is the driver is the music. Hmm. And the story is the stories are epic. They're often based on mythology, but there's not a tremendous amount of plot that can go there, even if the Duchess goes here and all of these things. But
right.
they're really the force of one grand event, or there's a great thrust that way, the narrative thrust, and that allows you to let music breathe and sit
right.
and repeat. And I that form is very appealing to me.
Right. Do you have a sense of what having now done some work in opera, how that sort of informs the stuff you do in musical theater at all? Does it?
Well, because I orchestrate my own stuff in opera, it has given me much more of an idea of what I want from an orchestrator when
that's interesting.
In theater.
Yeah.
So starting even with Fun Home, it's not about writing on the piano and then handing it to an orchestrator and saying, I hope it goes well. It's really,
right.
My mentor had said in the beginning, you know, well, who is going to play that? And I never used to think about that when I started out. I was just,
right.
you know, praying it would get to the page. And he was saying that the unless you're writing for the piano is a representation of the orchestra. It's the one of, or if the only instrument that is, that the range is greater than the orchestra, and you have to write it understanding who is going to play that. Otherwise, right. it will never sound as good as it does on a piano,
right.
because a piano can pedal and a piano can do a lot of, arpeggios and a lot
right.
of movement in an orchestra. There are very few instruments that do that way.
And this may change from piece to piece and song to song, but what do you want out of an orchestration then when you hand over?
Well, I want the orchestration to be representing the core that we start the piece with. So it has to be the integration of ideas that's been around forever. I mean, Jerome Kern, since the early 1900s, this idea has been around that there's a oneness to it. But that means that everybody, it's like when Chorus Line ends with the number one, it really not only dramatized the idea of what happens with tension, because he doesn't really give you a kick line till the end, which is so
right.
genius.
Right.
And then the lights go out. But the idea that a really wonderful event for me in musical theater is when everything merges, there's a oneness and integration. And that means right down to what the second violins, if you're so lucky.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you got to.
But to the pinky of what a piano player is, you know, all of those details contribute. Right. Nothing is neutral.
Right. You mentioned your mentor. Who is your mentor?
My mentor was a man named Burl Redd, who was a great educator, composer. He was wonderful. Gentleman from Arkansas. He went to Baylor and then Yale, studied with Elliot Carter. And then I met him in my early 20s and we had a business together for 25 years.
Right, yeah. And what are you working on now, other than Soft Power and the upcoming Carolina Change?
Well, I have a Met commission that I'm writing right now.
Great.
I'm going to the McDowell Colony, thank God.
Yeah,
thank
congratulations. I just saw that. Yeah.
Thank God that I can go there and write. Blue will be making its way around the country, hopefully with more stops.
Can you tell us anything about the Met Commission, or are you working with another artist on it? Or
It's based on the play Grounded by George Brandt, mm-hmm. who is a wonderful playwright.
Yeah,
It was a one woman play.
Yeah,
I'm expanding based on his libretto, which is written.
Yeah,
and
interesting.
It's about a fighter pilot.
Right.
And
Anne Hathaway was in a production of it a few years ago, right?
One that I really
you saw it before then, probably.
Oh maybe? The one that I really loved was the one I saw at the Studio Theater in D.C.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I thought it was astonishing.
Mm.
And when Peter and George and I met, I asked one of the actors to come and read part of the play on the Met stage so I could just see what it would be like. And the proscenium, you know, whether it makes it there or not, the proscenium took on an entire character of being the sky. So
cool. See. And you probably don't even have a timeline for that yet, or do you?
I have some deadlines for it.
Okay.
I don't write if I don't have deadlines, so right. I have that. Yeah, and I'm writing a new musical that hasn't been announced yet, but it's with David Lindsay Abaire.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. That is this the first time since Shrek that you guys have worked together? Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Good. Well, we look forward to seeing that. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me.
It's a pleasure.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks, Janine.
You too.
That was Janine Tesori, the composer of Soft Power, now playing at the Public Theater, and of Caroline or Change, getting a Broadway revival this spring. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, please tell a friend, or tell some strangers, and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to Stagecraft. I'll be back with another new episode next week. Until then, see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.